Hello again, everybody.
Hey!
Welcome back to Cocktails and Killers. I'm Heather.
I'm Lena.
And I know it's been a while. We've been really bad.
Well, we had a little trip, you know, out to Vegas. And yeah, just a lot of crazy shit going on. So, but we're back again.
Tonight, we're going to talk about another local case. This one, well, I would say, I started to say it has been solved, but...
But not really, depending not on really, who you ask, right?
Very true. This is a case against a man. It's about the trials of Anthony Gray.
And what's the name of the documentary again?
It's called...
If anybody wants to watch it?
It's on Discovery Plus, and it is called The Kentucky Murder Mystery.
Yes, that's it.
The Trials of Anthony Gray.
Yep. It's really, really good.
It is. The first time I sat down to watch it, I mean, the entire first half of the show, you're just totally convinced that they have the right guy.
Oh, yeah, I know. I remember feeling that way, too.
And then when the second half came around, I was like, holy shit.
I know.
It's insane.
You're going to hear all the details tonight.
Yes.
And tonight we're having a sober podcast too, by the way, so.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah. No fun.
Oh, well. So this all started back in April of 2007, and it was April 26th. 2007 to be exact.
So 14 years.
Yeah. So there was a 911 call that went into the Scott County dispatch. Mm-hmm. And for those of you not from Kentucky, Scott County is just north of the Lexington area. There's a town, the biggest town there is Georgetown. So the call was placed by a woman by the name of Jody Lucas. And she was calling in to report finding her father, Jim Gray's body in his home, and she had believed he had been shot.
She called him her father, but he's really not her father.
No.
Right?
Right.
She's like an, quote, adopted daughter.
Yes. She told the dispatcher that she couldn't find her mom, and she was too scared to go back into the house. I guess when she walked in and saw her dad, she was scared, and she left.
Freaked out.
Was too afraid to go back in. So, dispatch sent the police, the fire department, to the residence of Jim and Vivian Gray, which was at 8811 Cincinnati Road in Sadieville, Kentucky.
Super small.
Super teeny
podunk little place.
So, when the authorities got there, they found the bodies of Jim, who was 63, and Vivian, who was 55, inside their home. And both of them had been shot to death. Jim was found face down in a pool of blood in the living/dining room area, and he had been shot in the back of the head. He still had $480 in cash on him, as well as a pistol. Vivian was found in the dining room, and she was slumped into the floor next to a gun cabinet, which was open, and the key was still in the lock.
Oh, I don't remember
but
that.
But none of the guns were missing from the cabinet.
Hmm.
Upon initial investigation, the detective, Sergeant Roger Pursley, and I should put quotation marks around his friggin' title,
right?
Because,
I just get angry hearing his name.
He was unable to tell where she had been shot other than through her right hand. James and Vivian had been married for almost 40 years, and James was retired from IBM. He actually had a flea market that was across the street from their house.
That's right, yep.
And it was called Gray's on Main. Vivian had been a part-time teacher back in the day. Technically, Jody wasn't their daughter. She moved into the Georgetown area around 2002. And she used to go to yard sales a lot. And she used to run into James.
Okay. I wondered kind of, couldn't remember how they met or if it even said it in the documentary.
Yeah, so. they would go yards, or they would run into each other at yard sales. And, you know, she was new to the area and she didn't really know the area very well. So James had offered for her to ride with him to go to the yard sales. And after about a year, she finally met Vivian.
I just think that's weird, but it whatever. Is. And,
you know, she even said that she had been afraid to meet Vivian because of what, you know, she may think about the woman that's riding around with her husband to all these yard sales.
I'm not saying I would like that, but, you know.
But, you know, she said it turned out to actually be the total opposite. She said, you know, Vivian accepted her with total kindness. And she said that James and Vivian really became like parents to her. So that's why she referred to them as mom and dad. And she never knew that that James and Vivian actually did have a child until she met Vivian. She said that James had never mentioned that they had a son the whole time, like, they were going to yard sales together for a year.
I would think that would be, like, suspicious, too, you know.
Yeah. Know, even during the holidays, all the holidays, James and Vivian celebrated those at Jody's house. Like, they never mentioned, you know, anything.
Having a child or a son.
Yeah. And she actually didn't meet Anthony until about 5 years later in 2006.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was that long.
Anthony Gray, which is their son, worked in Lexington as a mechanic, and he worked on Ford trucks. Vivian had told Jody that he was estranged from them, and he hadn't been around for about 10 years. Anthony has said, you know, that his relationship with his parents was distant.
It was strained.
Even as a child, though. I mean, growing up, he was like, they didn't spend a lot of time together. He said, of course, you know, he had chores that he was expected to do. He was responsible for getting himself up and ready for school because both of his parents worked early.
Yeah.
So he had to get up, you know, feed himself, make sure he caught the bus on time.
Kind of took care of himself.
Yeah. And he said that, you know, his parents working full time wouldn't get home until late. He said he pretty much raised himself.
A latchkey kid.
A latchkey kid. Yes, exactly. I mean, weren't we all in the 80s and 90s?
Yeah, I would have been if it hadn't been for my grandparents, that's for sure. So,
yeah. I mean, I went to a babysitter, I think, until I was like 12, and then after that, I was home by myself. At the crime scene, once the coroner by the name of John Goble completed his investigation, he turned the scene over to Anthony once they removed the bodies, which I thought was weird. I didn't know a coroner had the authority.
I didn't know that either.
To release a scene to somebody.
I remember seeing that in the documentary and was like, what? That's weird. But like, I mean, but if someone released the scene to me, I would be like, okay, well, I guess.
Yeah, he told them to start cleaning up.
Yeah, I would do the same thing.
So, you know, they actually asked people, because, you know, when something like that happens, there's a bunch of looky-loos out there trying to be nosy and see what's going on. Yeah. So they, like, pretty much asked who wants to help clean up, and there were people who volunteered to go in and clean up the crime scene, which probably hadn't even been fully processed,
probably
to be honest. I mean, we know it wasn't.
Yeah.
They proved that in court later on. It was not. They did not know how to handle a homicide.
No. Clearly.
The department did not.
I feel like we could have done a better job than them.
For real. We could have. When Detective Sergeant Roger Pursley learned that the scene had been released to Anthony, he felt that it was too early because there could be more evidence that could be collected. So he resealed the crime scene, and he made a call to Anthony Gray's cell phone and told him, he left a message for him, not to go into the house because it is still considered a crime scene.
You can't, like, okay, what... Let's say the coroner, you know, he did release it, whatever. Where the fuck were all the detectives then to say, oh, you know, maybe we shouldn't do this. But after, you want to come back hours after that you've had people traipsing through your house to clean it and then reseal it?
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works.
They've already gone in and done cleaning and destroyed the whole scene.
Everything is contaminated now.
It's all fucked.
Yep.
And you all didn't even really do anything before that. So
that to me, I'm just like, who in their right mind would think, oh yeah, we can reseal this and get more evidence after it's been cleaned and basically just, you know, ran through by every Tom, Dick, and Harry.
I mean, so, of course, like I said earlier, when that scene was originally released by the coroner, Anthony, there were some other volunteers, along with Anthony's girlfriend, mm-hmm. Rosa Rowland, who went in and they cleaned up the scene in the house. Anthony and his girlfriend then went back to where they lived in Carlisle.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think her nephew was with them. So they went back to their place, got a bunch of clothes, and then went back to Vivian and James's place mm-hmm. to stay the night. Rosa said that once they got back there to the house, there was new crime scene tape that was across the front door. And Rosa had said, you know, she told Anthony that came from the police. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can't go back into there. We can't go back in the house.
And he hadn't gotten the voicemail at this point.
Supposedly.
Right? Okay.
He hadn't gotten it. But Anthony, see, here's the thing. So when they got there, Anthony called 911.
They played the recording.
They played the
stuff.
Recording.
Yes.
He talked to dispatch. They told him, yeah, you know, Detective Pursley has resealed the scene and you can't enter the house. So regardless of him getting that voicemail mm-hmm. or not, he was told not to enter that house.
Right.
And he said, oh, okay, you know, he said he understood and he hung up. Well, the next morning, Jody said she got a call from Vivian and James's house. It came up on her caller ID. And she was like, what in the world? And when she answered, it was Anthony. And she was like, what are you doing in the house?
Mm-hmm.
And he said that they had spent the night there the previous night. And she told him, you know, that house is still a crime scene. And she told him he shouldn't be there. So she hung up and she calls 911. And she told him, you know, that Anthony was in the house and he shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
So Anthony and his girlfriend had spent the night in Vivian and James's house and actually slept in their bed, which creeps me out.
I know. I think that's super creepy too. Now, does that make you a murderer? No. Does that make it a little weird to me? Yes. Everyone handles things differently. I wouldn't want to be there. Definitely wouldn't want to sleep in their bed. But, you know, it is weird and I thought it was super fucked up. But it doesn't mean that you killed someone.
Exactly.
You know.
It's just really...
It's a bad look.
It's a really bad look when you have that voicemail on your cell phone telling you that crime scene's been resealed.
Mm-hmm.
The crime scene tape is back on the door.
Right.
You call and they tell you do not go in that house. And what do?
You go in and you
spend the night there and you sleep in their bed. It's very weird.
Weird is the best way.
It's so strange.
Yeah.
So Jody had called, you know, 911 and told them what had happened. Anthony had said in court that he had slept in the bed with his mom many times growing up. And he would lay in there and watch TV with her. And he just felt closer to them sleeping in their bed. He said he didn't get the message from Detective Pursley until the next morning. But regardless, like I said, you called and they told you not to go in.
Exactly. You still knew.
Right. So after Jody had called 911, they let Detective Pursley know, hey, he's in the house.
Mm-hmm.
When Detective Pursley questioned Anthony, he had asked Anthony, you know, if there was any conflict between him and his parents. Anthony, of course, stated that he loved his parents, that they were all that he ever had, that they were his best friends. Again, that's weird when your parents are telling other people that you've been estranged for 10 years. He said, you know, that while there had been conflict in the years before, there had been no current conflict mm-hmm. between them.
Well, I think you can exist like that with family. You cannot be in a fight. You can be distant, but you can still love each other, you know.
True. Oh, yeah. I mean,
so,
God, it's so common.
Yeah. You know,
to just
like,
not get along.
But, like, why you would lie and say that, I don't know. I can't speak to that, you know.
Right.
But That, again, does not make you a murderer.
No.
Physical evidence.
Which all was, you know...
fucked.
Exactly. So when Anthony was really young, he married a girl named Amy. And they actually ended up having two sons together.
Yep, that's right.
Darwin and Charlie. And they lived
Charles Darwin.
I know. That was what I thought. Yeah, that's like weird. Charles Darwin. Mm-hmm. They lived in a trailer behind Vivian and James's house at the back of the property. Amy became sick, and she died very suddenly. Really young.
Oh, I forgot that she had passed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And after she had died, Anthony started to run wild. He was never home to take care of his two sons.
Obviously, he didn't have good coping mechanisms, I guess. Not that I think that I probably would not, maybe not do the same. I don't know. You don't know how you would act. You know, yeah. So.
James and Vivian actually took in the boys. They ended up obtaining custody of them, and they were actually raising them as their own. Mm-hmm. This, of course, caused an argument between Anthony and his parents. I don't know why. I mean, you weren't raising them.
You'd think he'd be grateful for that.
Exactly. He actually went to the state, and he made accusations against his parents, which resulted in the boys being removed from the home, placed into foster care, where they were eventually adopted. Like, why would you...
Right, that's awful.
Why would you put your kids in the system instead of...
Yeah, that's fucked up. You're a bad dad.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, we're not saying this man is a saint or a perfect person by any means.
You know? I mean, he is not anywhere near perfect. According to Jody, 2 weeks before their death, Vivian and James actually sat down with her to discuss wills. They told her that they wanted her to be the executor of their estate. And they wanted everything to go to their two grandsons. They actually wanted to cut Anthony completely out of the will. Vivian's brother, Robert Jones, also said that he spoke with his sister a couple weeks before her and James were murdered. And they discussed how disappointed she was with Anthony and that her and James had changed their will and he was getting nothing. According to Anthony's ex, Rosa, before their deaths, Vivian and James actually had an argument with Anthony after they told him they were removing him from the will. She claimed that on their way home that night, Anthony said that even if his parents did die, he would still get everything.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he told the girlfriend.
Yeah, on their way home after he got into an argument with them over that.
Did she elaborate on why he thought that or why?
No. I mean, that was the only part that they really showed in the documentary was her saying that.
I don't even remember that part, so.
Yeah. Jody had asked the police to go back into the house to look for a will and a life insurance policy. The police had asked if the Grays had a safe, and she told them it was in the basement. The police didn't even know the house had a basement. That shows you how well...
So thorough!
They processed this crime scene. God,
this is just... I'm just like...
Which, to be fair, the basement entrance was kind of hidden.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I would think if you were thoroughly processing this crime scene...
You would have discovered that.
You probably would have come across it.
Yeah.
The door that led to the basement was kind of hidden, so the police never searched it before the crime scene was originally released. So after that crime scene had been processed is when they finally went back in and found the basement. There was no safe in that basement when the police went down there. Jody thinks that... the night that Anthony spent in the house after the murders, he stole the safe and he burned the will because he didn't like what it said. I don't know. I don't think that they never figured out what happened with the safe.
Well,
supposedly there were three safes in that
house. And I remember in the documentary they showed where they took pictures where it had, that's a big safe.
That wouldn't be a light safe to pack.
What it did not look like something that two people could carry out, especially a man and just a woman. You know what I mean? Based on the size of the bottom of it.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, you know it had to be heavy. Had to be.
Had to be heavy. Those safes aren't made to be lightweight.
I don't know, like, the height yeah. or how big of a safe it was. They just showed, like, the space.
We're not talking about, like, a little lockbox here, guys.
No.
Like, I mean, it's a big, like, you know, square. Like, something yeah. pretty, you know, massive.
Significant.
Yeah.
And it was gone. And, you know, Jody remembered a conversation that was had between Anthony and Vivian in the summer of 2006, the year before, when they were all in the basement working on the air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
According to Jody, Anthony had asked for the combination to the safe. And his mom had told him that he didn't need to know it. That the first chance he got, it would be empty. Anthony had told her, well, someone needs to know it. If you and Dad die together, someone can get it. Crazier things have happened. You never know. Anthony claims to have no knowledge of his parents having a safe in their basement when he's in court. Like, I remember when they questioned him in court, he was like, oh, well, I wasn't really paying attention. I was focused on the air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
Honey, I'm pretty sure you're lying.
Right.
I'm pretty sure you knew there was a safe there.
Yeah.
He's
been caught in more than one lie, you know?
Exactly. But when you walked down those stairs and you turned that corner, it was right there in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
It was right there. You didn't not know that yeah. they had a safe.
I mean, it would be like a piece of furniture, you know what I mean? Like, exactly.
You would notice that. Because you probably had to walk past it to get to the air conditioning
exactly.
unit and all that. There was another ex-girlfriend of Anthony's by the name of Tammy Kidd. She said back in 2001, Anthony told her that he wanted to kill his parents. He told her that she would be the driver, like he had it planned out. She would be the getaway driver. He would obtain a gun. He would go into the house and kill them, and she would drive him away and would be his alibi. Anthony actually admitted to this in court, but stated that he was only venting, and he wasn't actually serious about it.
Though Tammy just looks so bad. Don't vent about stuff like that, you know? Like, that's just...
I mean, Tammy even said she had asked him, are you serious? And he said, yeah. He said, yes. He was serious about wanting to kill them. At first, my first initial thought was, you know, maybe this was a girlfriend looking to get back mm-hmm. at him, but he actually admitted
right,
to it,
yeah.
which is, again, it's almost like if you had something to hide, you wouldn't admit to it, but
yeah.
at the same time.
But then he lied about other things.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the things that he says and does, like, it just makes no sense. So,
exactly.
You know, he looks like super sketch.
So weird.
You know?
Yeah. So, 6 months after those murders, on October the 20th of 2007... Anthony Gray was interviewed by the police. Now, he had been interviewed several times.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he had been interviewed, it had been recorded beginning to end. Now, Detective Pursley states that before they even sat down to this interview, Anthony made a statement saying, you can't put me there, you can't prove it. Well, you can't prove he actually said
right,
that.
That's what I was going to say.
It was thought by the authorities that James and Vivian had been murdered on the night of Tuesday, April the 24th, so 2 days before the bodies
mm-hmm.
were actually found. Anthony stated that he worked that day, and then after work, he met up with his girlfriend in Cynthia, and then they drove to Butler, Kentucky, because he had to work on a forklift.
Mm.
So Rosa had said in court that on that evening of April 24th, that Tuesday, her and Anthony had gotten into an argument over a phone call that Anthony had gotten from Jody. I'm not really sure what the phone call was about.
Was about, right?
But Rosa said that she went to bed and supposedly Anthony left the house. She isn't sure if he left or not. Her daughter, Brittany Dixon, said that after her mother went to bed,
mm-hmm.
Anthony got into his car and he headed towards Carlisle. While Anthony was being interviewed by police on October 20th, 2007, Anthony eventually confessed to murdering his parents.
Yep, I remember that.
He states that after the argument with Rosa, he got into his car and he made the drive to his parents' house. He stated that he got there maybe around 9 or 9:30. His parents were still up. He said that he was sitting on the couch talking with his dad, and at some point, his dad had brought a firearm into the room. Anthony said there wasn't normally a firearm where they were sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony said that he had it in his hand. He wasn't sure why he had it in his hand. And then a fight broke out between him and his parents. He said he couldn't remember what they were fighting about, but he remembers his dad became very loud and violent, and at some point Anthony said either his dad hit him or he blacked out. He wasn't sure. And then he stood up and he shot his dad. Anthony said he was out of control and he shot his mom, and then he ran out the door. He said he got in his car and left and said he didn't even remember doing it, that it was like a dream because he loved his parents. Anthony called Jody and he told her, "They told me I did it. So I guess I did, but I don't remember." Jody said she threw the phone down and she began crying.
Mm-hmm.
They play like portions of his confession, and you can tell he has no idea. He wasn't there.
No clue.
No way.
Yeah.
He had no recollection of anything. He was basically regurgitating what had been put into his head by the police.
Right, and I felt like there was, like, no details that he really gave to,
because,
like,
he didn't have
right, any. Exactly.
He couldn't remember anything.
Yeah.
Like, he...
Like, oh, I shot them here. This happened. That happened. It was basically just, like, you know, skimming a chapter and just, you know, like,
yeah.
You don't give anything that lets
there,
you...
There was absolutely...
No knowledge, really.
No. You could tell he had no knowledge.
He had none.
There was no detail in anything. And normally, if you're going to confess, I don't think a person would confess with that little... They would give that little information.
Right.
When they were confessing to something, if they actually done it.
I agree.
Anthony was arrested for the murder of his parents. He pled not guilty. The case went to trial in 2012, but it resulted in a hung jury.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't make a decision. They all couldn't come to a decision. The case was retried a year later in 2013. It actually resulted in a guilty verdict, and Anthony was sentenced to 45 years in prison. Now, Anthony's attorney, Rodney Barnes, said that when that verdict was read, it was like being punched in the gut. He said the only reason Anthony was convicted was because of his confession.
Right.
And he only confessed because he was coerced by the police, because they presented him with a litany of false, made-up
this
evidence.
This just makes me so fucking, like...
I can't...
How is this even allowed?
That's ridiculous to me. I can understand, like... Again, that confession was the only thing that convicted him.
Yeah.
Period. Because they had nothing.
Nothing. No physical
nothing.
Evidence.
They
nothing.
Had nothing. And I'm telling you, they had nothing.
Other
nothing.
Than him making himself look guilty. Because, I mean, you know,
right.
With things he said and things like that. But there was no evidence to link him to the crimes.
No.
Period.
Nothing. These are the cases that really get
Like, people
me.
Have gotten off with more evidence against them.
Yeah.
In many cases.
There was nothing to ever put him in that house. Nothing. The only thing was that bullshit confession, which anybody with two brain cells could put together. He didn't know what the hell he's talking about.
No. And I know, you know, for you and I, it's like, well, how do people give false confessions? But they do it all the time.
Oh my God, you guys, there's so many cases. There is actually an entire series on Netflix. Have you watched all that yet?
I don't think I finished it, no.
My blood pressure was...
Like, this
my
is,
blood
it's
was
calming,
boiling
you know?
The entire time I watched it. I was so angry because... Here's a PSA for everybody out there. It doesn't matter. If anything ever happens to anybody you know, and the cops ever want to talk to you, I don't care how small... Whatever, lawyer up, period.
Yeah.
Lawyer up. Never, ever talk to the cops without a lawyer present. Ever. There have been so many cases of these people being coerced
mm-hmm.
into false confessions for
yep.
stuff they never did.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't lawyer up when they should have. They only lawyered up after the fact.
And then you get this, like, mind fuck from the police of, we just need your help and we'll let you go. And you think you can do and say what they want and you'll get to go home. And they just
will sit there and they will drill these people for hours and hours and hours.
I think a lot
and
of it,
hours.
Too, mental capacity, I think, you know, like...
That, yeah.
Plays a big part, too, you know.
I mean, he had said that... I mean, they just basically, like you said, they fucked with his mind for hours. For 5 hours.
With basically no video of the whole thing.
No, they didn't have the video
like,
at all.
You know, like,
no.
Okay.
They had, like, his lawyer had said he had been interviewed at least a dozen times before, and every last minute of those interviews had been recorded except for this last one.
Coincidence?
Absolutely
not. You know?
Anthony had stated during his confession that he knew he had to have been the one that had done it because of all the evidence that the police showed him.
Like, which was all fake.
It was all fake, but he didn't, you know, he had no idea.
Okay, let's say that Lena gets on a bender one day, okay, and I'm drinking wine and I pass out. And Heather comes to me the next day and shows me quote-unquote evidence that I did something. I might be like, oh my God, I must have done it because she has quote-unquote evidence.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, people, for, you know, a false confession. Like, it just happens all the time.
It really does. And I cannot, I can't remember. I can't remember the name of it. It's on Netflix.
American Murderer or whatever?
No.
The one in Wisconsin?
No.
The big one?
It's a complete series.
Oh, the series one. Oh, that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a complete series of people who were accused of crimes that most likely did not actually commit those crimes. They were lured into false confessions. It happens way more often than you think. That's why there's some statistic I remember hearing. I don't know if it's accurate still. It's something like, what, 25% of inmates are actually innocent?
I would say that's 100% likely, if maybe not even higher than that now.
Yeah.
You know? Especially, I feel like, in these small towns,
mm-hmm.
because basically, we know they suck, okay? So, they are going to set their sights on one person, and they're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
Come hell or high water.
Exactly. And that happens a lot. I mean, just look at that case I had in North Carolina.
Right.
You know, they had their sights set on that other Vista worker.
Yep.
When all along, it was probably some local boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they even confessed to it, but it was ignored.
Nothing ever happened.
Because they're just some good old local boys.
Right, exactly.
Fuck off. It just absolutely... I'm sure I'll
burns
end up,
my biscuits.
It does burn my biscuits. Anthony's lawyer appealed the case in 2013. Rodney had stated that, you know, he watched that confession video over 100 times. And there was no real information given
right.
by Anthony. And again, from what they showed of his confession on there, I was trying, I actually Googled to see if I could find the whole thing somewhere, and I couldn't.
Of course.
Obviously.
I'm sure that was destroyed real quick.
It wouldn't surprise me. He just had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
He was just...
clueless.
Totally clueless. And again, you know, his lawyer said that Anthony had been interviewed at least a dozen times before. Every minute of those was recorded. However, this interview where Anthony confessed, there were 5.5 hours of the interview that went unrecorded.
That's so fucked up.
Anthony was led into that interview under the pretense that he needed to come in and sign some routine paperwork.
I remember that from the documentary.
Mm-hmm. So he gets there, and he said that, you know, they talked about the signature, and then they asked him to step out for a moment, that they needed to talk to him about some other things. When he went back in the room, they proceeded to show him a photo that had supposedly been taken of his car the night of the murders near his parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
They also told him there was a witness who had come forward and that there was also blood spatter evidence on his work uniform, and that there was also gunshot residue that was found on his work uniform. All of that was a lie.
Complete fabrication.
Every last bit of it. They had nothing.
I will never understand how that is legal to do that.
I don't either. Detectives Roger Pursley and Dave Willis then pulled out crime scene photos that had Anthony's parents in it, and they were telling him that he did it. He killed his parents. And then they put the pictures in front of him. Anthony said that he begged them to put the photos away.
That's just like fucking torture. Why would you do that to someone?
To fuck with their mind.
Right, exactly. That's the only reason.
Exactly.
Like, that's just...
He told him he couldn't stand to see them. Instead of putting them away, the detectives, being the assholes they are... I'm sorry, but they're complete pieces of shit. They don't deserve the title of detective. They taped the pictures up on the wall in front of Anthony so that every time he looked up, he was seeing the pictures of his dead parents
That's
on the wall.
That's so fucked up.
It is awful. While they were all in that room, Roger Pursley's cell phone started to ring.
Oh, yeah.
And Roger tells Anthony he needs to take this call. Detective Pursley tells Anthony that it's a judge on the phone. And he proceeds to tell Anthony that if he doesn't confess to killing his parents, then they're going to make sure that he gets the death penalty.
And I feel like that's always the leverage they use. If you just confess, we'll make sure you don't die.
Yeah.
So if someone in that mind state that has been tortured for almost 6 hours with pictures of their dead parents, lied to, said we have this, we have that, is being presented with choosing life in prison or death, and they're so fucked they don't know... up from down.
Right.
What would you do?
You would think, I've lost my fucking mind.
Right.
I must be going crazy because they are putting this shit in front of me that clearly shows I did it. Yeah. I must have lost my mind. I have no actual recollection. And this isn't the first time that shit like this has happened. I mean, these cops lie to these people to lure them into false confessions all the fucking time. That's why I say lawyer up immediately.
Oh, for sure.
Period. You do not talk to them, not one sentence, nothing, no. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, if you lawyer up, it makes you look guilty. No, it makes you look smart.
Yeah, and they're going to make you look guilty if they want to. Like, yeah. Clearly, I mean,
yes,
so, you know.
Exactly.
To try to... get a false confession, so...
You know, Anthony started to freak out when they brought up the death penalty. Scared the hell out of him.
It would scare anybody.
He was like, well, I'm gonna die.
Yeah.
I don't want to die. It is... of course, it's very likely that that whole phone call was just a ruse.
You know it was.
It was a complete con. It was part of the con to get him to confess.
Yeah.
It was part of the mindfuck.
They had all that planned. You know, oh, come in, sign some paperwork. Knowing good and well that... they just led him there under false pretenses.
Exactly.
You know, to try to see how far they could push him.
Exactly. And, you know, like I said earlier, people are lured into those false confessions by others. They make them doubt their own memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do.
It's basically like gaslighting times 1,000.
Yeah. And, you know, these detectives were telling Anthony, they were like, you know, sometimes when there's a trauma like that in your life, you snap, and sometimes you black out, and you can't remember. And he said in his confession, maybe I blacked out.
Right, exactly.
It was like a dream. I don't remember.
They put that in his head.
Exactly. And that's why I said, you know, most of what he was confessing was just regurgitating what the police had told him.
Right.
So after that fake-ass phone call, Anthony, they left him alone in the room for 30 minutes. They left him in there all by himself to think about all that fake evidence that, you know, was
pictures
had been presented to him. That phony phone call, the photos of his dead parents taped up to the wall. They let him sit in there and stew in that for 30 minutes. And after that, they come back in with another document that is supposedly a Kentucky State Police lab report that stated that there was DNA from James and Vivian, as well as gunshot residue, found in Anthony's car. None of that ever existed.
All fake.
All fake. This was complete fabrication. Detective Roger Pursley and Detective Willis actually typed up this fake lab report themselves. They berated him for hours to the point that he thought he must be crazy for having no recollection for committing this crime. And when he seen that fake lab report, it absolutely broke him. And it was at this point they turned on the video camera to get his confession.
Yep.
It's fucking disgusting.
It is. Like, how shitty of a cop do you have to be that you can't even do your fucking job right?
Exactly.
That you have to just make shit up.
Uh-huh.
But yet, you still have a job.
I don't know how it works in Scott County. I don't know if it's like the small towns back home where your authorities are kind of like your sheriff and all that.
Oh,
yeah. Elected.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know if that's how it works. But regardless, I think, in my opinion, anytime there is a homicide, local cops should never be allowed to touch it. It
Definitely.
Should go to the state level, at least.
For sure.
Because these local podunk fuckers have no clue how to handle a homicide. They're just not trained.
And I just feel like, okay, let's say that I was that detective, that piece of shit, and I did all this. And now everybody knows that I basically had to lie to lie. And I'm like, I would be like, oh my God.
Now everybody knows you're a fucking liar. You've ruined your credibility.
Right. But
I'd never fucking trust you for anything. Ever. Neither one of you.
Mm-mm. Hell no.
I wouldn't trust that department, period. I mean, and that goes in, like, I mean, this ain't a one time. This isn't something that's just happened there. I mean, look at the Crystal Rogers case.
Right.
That whole police department's corrupt and you know it.
Oh, yeah.
They're all involved. Like, that's a totally different story.
That's going to be like a 3-part series.
Oh, my God. That one would be huge.
Especially since they've got new stuff going on, you know, so.
I haven't heard anything more about it lately.
I know, other than they took some stuff, but.
I hope something comes up in
that. I know, I do too.
Now, this documentary actually did interview a retired judge. Her name was Tamara Gormley, and she said, a lot of people don't realize that law enforcement is allowed to lie to people about evidence in a case, about what they know, and so on and so forth. She said departments have been known to put people on fake lie detector tests. Well, that sent off my little, like, ding, ding, ding.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with that case in North Carolina with Nancy, remember the guy they suspected, he did 3 lie detector
That's
tests.
That's right, yeah.
They refused to give him the results.
Uh-huh.
Probably because they were fake.
Probably.
Even back then, they were probably fake.
I wouldn't
fake.
Be surprised, not one bit.
Now, the James Starks, he's a private investigator that was hired by the defense.
Mm-hmm.
He states that the Kentucky revised statutes considers this to be forgery in the second degree and that the police actually broke the law by doing that. He was like, that's my take on it. Now, I haven't actually read these revised statutes. I can't see it. And I would think that if I was ever a judge, I wouldn't.
Oh, I wouldn't allow that.
Hell no.
No way.
It just, our justice system is so fucked.
It is. It's horrible.
Now, Jody said that from day one, the police told her over and over that Anthony did this.
Mm-hmm.
And she believed him.
Yeah. I mean, she thought it was him from day one.
Yeah. I mean, they pretty much told her that. And she said in this documentary, she said she believed them because she actually had no idea just what huge liars the police were. So even she seen the lie.
Yep.
She knows now. Jody had said, in the beginning, she believed Anthony did kill his parents, and she didn't really know Anthony in the beginning. She said that she would even record her phone calls with him, and she would give them to the police, just in case there was any type of evidence that could be used in them against him. She said that it turned out that the police had absolutely no evidence. They were lying the whole time. She started to feel guilty for believing that Anthony had killed his parents, and she actually had even told him to his face at one point that she thought he did it. And so she started to kind of feel guilty. about all of that. Now, let's talk about who James and Vivian really were.
Mm-hmm.
James's business, his little flea market he had, his business was buying things and selling things. He had that little shop across the road from the house. It was an all-cash business. Now, according to Jody, he sold pretty much everything. Cars, trucks, washers, dryers, figurines, shoes, etc.
Basically whatever he could probably get at a good deal to flip it.
So, what some people may not have known is that he also sold guns.
Mm-hmm.
When they interviewed Jason Linville, he had said that James dealt with a lot of people that owned guns, and everyone knew what James did, but nobody ever said anything.
And what kind of people buy secondhand sketchy guns anyway?
Exactly.
Probably people that can't legally obtain one.
Most likely.
We're not dealing with a high-class clientele here, let's be honest.
Exactly. Jason, he knew the Grays. He actually did some mechanic work for them. According to him, he said even the cops knew that James bought and sold guns. I mean, it's a small town.
Yeah.
Of course they knew.
Yeah.
You know, and here in Kentucky, guns are a big business. Private citizens can sell a gun, and they don't even have to record who they're selling it to.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. So anybody in the state can pretty much get a gun from a private citizen.
Or buy one and then sell it to
you
anybody.
Can sell it to a felon. Yeah. And
as long as they don't get caught with it, then, exactly. You know.
It's all right. James was also known to walk around with thousands of dollars in his pocket at any given time. Anthony had said that anytime they would go somewhere and his dad would go to pay for something, like he would just pull out a big wad of money and he would just start going through, like he would start taking off $100 bills one after the other. I mean, so as we were talking, James, you know, he dealt in guns with some very unsavory people.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony said at one point his mother had actually called him and told him that she was afraid of some of the people that James had been trading with.
Well, yeah.
One of those people was a man by the name of Peter Hafer. Peter made his whole living stealing from other people.
Oh, Peter.
According to Anthony's lawyer, Rodney, Peter actually assaulted one of his staff attorneys in open court. And there was video evidence.
Really?
Of it. Yeah, he jumped that guy in court. And
oh, my gosh.
There's actually video showing him attacking him, and he got 6 months in jail because of it. Peter, of course, is a lifelong criminal, and he has an extensive criminal history. He's also Jason Linville's brother-in-law. Jason said, you know, they were always in trouble together growing up.
Mm-hmm.
They were always in court together. They were even in prison together at one point. Jason said that, you know, Peter would go to any lengths just to make a dollar. That's all he cared mm-hmm. about was making a dollar.
Right.
Jason said that at one point, Peter had asked him to put full insurance on his car so he could put Jason's newborn son and the baby's mother in it and run them into a tree. And then they could collect a payoff.
Oh my God.
Jason was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, what would make you even think of doing something
criminal
like that?
Criminal mentality.
Oh my God. Jason also told Rodney Barnes that Peter had wanted him to help with the robbery, and he had identified the Grays as being the target of said robbery.
Mm. Shocker, huh?
Mm. According to Rodney, when they were in court regarding, like, I guess some scheduling of the trial for Anthony, a man followed him out into the hallway, and he actually identified himself as Harry Hoover. He said he had been in jail with Peter at the Scott County Detention Center. And Peter told him some things that he wanted to talk with Rodney about. So Rodney had his investigator, James Stark, go talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And this was January the 9th of 2017. James Starks sat down with Harry and interviewed him. Harry said that while they were in jail, Peter had started to make some hints when the incident would show up on the news.
You know, that's what they do. They get started talking to, I may know about this. And, you know, that's where people make their little confessions and shit.
It happens a lot in prison. Yeah. I mean, what else you got time to
do? Right, exactly.
He said that He would say things that, like, Anthony wasn't guilty. He would also told Harry he had seen the stacks of money while he had been dealing with James, and that he had planned to go into the safes and rob James. He told Harry he had a small plasma cutter to get into the safe with. And Peter also told Harry he had it planned out on how he was going to rob James. Mm-hmm. Peter said that he went into James and Vivian's house. Like, he went there, he knocked on the door, they knew him, right. They'd done business with him, so they let him in. Mm-hmm. He said Vivian was in the kitchen doing dishes. He told Harry that he sat there for about 5 to 10 minutes because he wanted to make James feel comfortable. Yep. He then asked James to see the .44 or the .45 that he had that he wanted to sell. When James brought it to him and handed it to him, he looked at it and then he shot James. Mm-hmm. He said that Vivian threw her hand up while she was in the kitchen and she screamed. And he thought maybe he had blown off about 3 of her fingers when he shot her.
Look at that. Details. No. Details, people.
He knew she'd been shot in the hand.
Yep. Mm. Give him more details than the one that supposedly did it.
Yeah. He also told Harry when he went to the basement and rounded the corner, he seen the indention in the floor where the safe used to be. So supposedly, the safe was already gone. He said, He said when he seen where the safe used to be, he said, I like to have shit.
I remember that from the documentary.
He said here he had just killed 2 people and there was no safe. Mm-hmm. Where the fuck did this safe go?
That's a good question.
Where did this safe go? This safe has never been
found.
Never. Nothing.
The Greys had to have moved it on their own is the only thing that I can think of. You know?
I would wonder about that, but why wasn't it ever found anywhere?
I don't know.
That's
a head scratcher because I don't think he would admit to doing all that and then not admit to taking the safe.
Right.
You know, like, I really think that he didn't, that the safe
And there's
was
no way,
gone.
Like you said, it would take way more than one man to move the safe.
Yeah, I think that's something you'd have to have planned. So, to me, the only people that could have had it moved would be the Greys. But why couldn't the people who they hired to move it, if they did, come forward? Like, mm-hmm. that whole thing doesn't
it's
make
so
sense
weird.
To
it's
me.
It's like, where does the safe disappear to? It just, I have no idea.
Maybe a skinwalker took it. I don't know.
5 months before these murders even happened, Peter had burglarized a gun store in Cynthiana, Dryden's Sporting Goods. From what is known about that burglary, Peter knocked a hole in the back wall of the building and he got away with about 75, 76 guns. Some of which were found by the police at mm-hmm. Vivian and James's residence after the murders.
Yeah.
I think they had about, I can't remember the numbers. I read about them in the newspaper. I think they had about like maybe 25 of them.
Oh, wow. They had quite a few.
Maybe. Could have been less. Mm-hmm. I can't remember.
Somewhere around that number?
Yeah, because he sold some guns to some other people and then some other people and he did this with them and da-da-da. And then James and Vivian had some.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter had sold those stolen guns to James Gray. Police knew about this connection, but they never followed up on it.
Like,
yeah, because that obviously wouldn't have, you know, a man dealing with a shady fucking burglar and stolen guns and he's selling them to said man and said man ends up dead. Yeah, there's no connection.
No, not at all.
There's nothing to look into there.
That's just absurd.
Later, when Peter was still in prison, of course, he was bragging about killing the Greys. And according to another inmate whose name was Ray Yarnell, who had known Peter since he was a child, he said Peter told him that he could murder somebody and get away with it and that someone else would get the blame. Ray said that he and Peter were talking about crimes they had gotten away with and Peter told him that someone else in Scott County would be blamed for something he had done and that person would probably get a life sentence. Wonder who that could be.
Right?
So, on March the 26th of 2011, Jason Linville had talked to Detectives Roger Pursley and Jack Patrick and told them about Peter Hafer's burglary of the gun store and the plan he had to murder the Grays. Mm-hmm. None of that was ever followed up on. Also, none of the testimony from Harry, Ray, or Jason about Peter was ever heard by the jury.
Isn't that just...
The judge heard the testimony, but ruled against it being heard by the jury in court. That's... Like, how can you... How?
How can you say you're judge, doing your job when you're not doing your fucking job?
Oh, my God. This is another one of those cases of they fucked up. But they don't want to look bad.
Exactly.
They can't admit they fucked up.
They just want things in their neat even though box.
It is so obvious what a bunch of fucking screw-ups they are.
Anybody else would be fired for less than at a job, you know?
So, you know, as we talked earlier, it turns out this entire investigation was botched from the beginning. Just the lead investigator, which was Roger Pursley, he only spent 4 minutes in the house when he got to the crime scene originally.
4 minutes.
Mm-hmm. They have like a log.
Takes me longer to take a shit.
They have like a time log, and it literally had 4 minutes from the time he entered to the time he left. 4 minutes isn't going to tell you shit.
Nothing.
The state police did not attempt to lift any fingerprints. They didn't attempt to look at any for any trace evidence at the scene. Again, like, this is the state police. And, you know, I said earlier, it should at least start at the state level. But sometimes I even question that.
Yeah.
The bullet that was lodged in the wall of the house never recovered. They just left it.
Yeah, let's just leave behind some evidence.
You know, and something that Rodney Barnes, the lawyer, was saying, he was like, and they even asked the detective Pursley in court, you know, it was never determined as to which lights were turned on at the time or off in the house, which could kind of give you an idea as to what time of day.
Right, it happened.
It happened. Because, believe it or not, time of death was never established in this case.
Mm-hmm.
It was assumed.
That's a big difference. Established and assumed.
Yeah. They assume that the Grays laid in the house for 2 days before being found. But it is suggested that Roger Pursley made this decision that Anthony Gray killed his parents. Because he didn't cry and act like Roger did when Roger's parents died. So that automatically told him, because Anthony wasn't at the scene, just a blubbering moron, that he must have done it.
He had his mind made up.
He had his mind made up as soon as he got there. He knew.
And
he did everything he could to make it so, even though it's most likely not true.
Mm-hmm.
It's also suggested that the time of death was placed as the night of April 24th because that was the time, the only time they could tie Anthony to the case.
Right.
Because that's the only time that his whereabouts were unaccounted for after he had that argument with Rosa and he left the house.
Yep.
So they just made the assumption that, oh, it was Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm. That's when it happened.
Now, there were actually several witnesses who came forward.
They saw them after
and
Tuesday.
And they saw them. They saw both James and Vivian on Wednesday.
That's what I thought. I remember hearing.
They swear that the Grays were alive on April 25th. Joy Jump, who is a local antique dealer, she knew the Grays. She often bought stuff from James to resell. She stated in court that she seen Vivian Gray outside the house on that Wednesday as she drove by their house. Now, one of the neighbors had a security camera, and the video shows her car going past. So she did actually drive past their house. And
at
she
that time,
saw,
she said she did.
So she saw Vivian outside. Another eyewitness by the name of Teresa Parrish, she seen James out in the yard on that Wednesday. The neighbor's security camera also picked up her car driving by. So she did drive by, and she was like, I seen James outside in the yard.
Yeah.
And
I
she
mean,
was
these
like,
people have no reason to lie.
No.
You know? Like.
And to beat all, the pastor of Stonewall Baptist Church, which was literally across the street from Vivian and James's house, the pastor testified that he was at the church that day on Wednesday from, he got there about 3:30 to 4 in the afternoon, and he was there till about 6 o'clock that evening. Mm-hmm. He was mowing. And he said that when he was putting gas into the push mower, he heard 3 shots. He didn't think anything of it. He thought somebody was target practicing. Yeah. Again, that's the thing here. Like,
right.
Maybe not here in Lexington, but when I'm back home,
yeah,
on my mother-in-law's farm or something
people
like that.
People shoot guns all the time.
People shoot guns all the time. You'll hear guns going off and you're just immune to it. Mm-hmm. You don't think anything of it.
It's just like background noise, basically. Yeah,
because people are always target shooting or I don't know what
or illegally killing something on their farm, like, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Poaching, yeah, poaching, whatever. You always hear guns back home.
Yeah.
All the freaking time. So he didn't think anything of it. He thought somebody was doing target practice. At the time that he heard those gunshots, Anthony was actually a couple hours away doing some work. And his cell phone records show that he wasn't even anywhere near.
Wasn't even humanly possible for him to be there.
So, in 2016, the Kentucky Supreme Court actually reviewed Anthony's case. And they threw out his conviction and they granted him a new trial due to how the confession was obtained and all the other errors.
And that's basically where the documentary kind of dropped off.
Yeah.
Right? Was like, all right, he's going to be getting a new trial.
Yeah. He got a new trial this year. The court also had said that the presiding judge over the previous trial in 2013, his name was Judge Isaacs. They said that he should have allowed the defense to present the possibility of another killer
of
during that trial.
Of course! You have a defense for a reason. If you can't use it, then what is that?
Exactly.
That's not being able to present your case.
It infuriates me. I was so angry typing all my notes up. I was just livid. I was like, there's just going to be so many F-bombs coming out of my mouth. Even though Anthony's conviction was thrown out, he actually remained in jail. But not in prison. He was kept in jail, like
in the detention center or whatever. Yeah.
Which, you know, even his lawyer had said, those detention centers, those local jails, aren't set up for long term. They're for like pretrial,
right?
You know,
drunk tanks, maybe.
Exactly.
Shit like
that. They're not set up for somebody to be in long term, but he has been for 14 years.
That's
he was considered pretrial. Peter Hafer was released from prison in 2019. So that motherfucker's out here walking around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as far as I know, he's still a free man. Who knows?
He's probably fucked up since then.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he could be back in jail by now. Anthony's new trial actually began last month in August of 2021. And I had the highest of hopes for this trial.
Especially after this documentary came out.
Oh my God. I was like, all this evidence that shows that there is most likely another killer.
Yeah.
There's no way he is going to walk away a free man.
But there's no way he could have possibly done it.
There's no way this
man.
Because I'm pretty sure they didn't even allow the confession in this one because it was bogus. I don't even think they allowed it. So I don't understand. Because at the completion of this trial, they found him guilty again. And they sentenced him to 55 years in prison. The 14 years that he has already served, of course, goes towards that sentence.
And how long did the jury deliberate?
They gave him more. I think it was only like a few hours.
That's 4 hours, maybe?
3 or 4.
It was something ridiculous.
It wasn't very much. But they added, originally, when they found him guilty, he got 45. And now they gave him another, they gave him 55 this time. I just don't understand.
Makes no sense.
Number one, this fucking trial shouldn't have had... It shouldn't have happened in Scott County again.
No.
I don't think. I think this trial should have taken place somewhere. No bias.
Yes.
But you got this small town mentality.
Yep.
You're not going to find an unbiased jury in a small town like that with people they know, this stuff happening to people they know. It's just not going to happen.
Nope. That's just not a fair trial, you know?
It's not. And I wonder if he has appeals.
I don't know if he has any left.
I don't know either.
I don't know. Somebody needs to start another documentary.
I know. Well, see, his lawyer retired after that, after this case.
I'd fucking retire too.
I think he actually, because he made a tweet after, he made a really scathing tweet, and I actually went to his Twitter to try and find it, and I couldn't. I think
he deleted it.
Oh. Yeah, he talked about basically how sorry the system is.
It is.
And just what a fucking farce of a trial this whole thing has been, and just...
The justice system is not just.
No, far from it. Far from it at all. And I, you know, I knew it even before I had heard of this story or really looked. I remember this being in the news back in 2007.
See, I don't remember it from back then.
I remember it. I just heard it in passing on the news. You know, it wasn't anything I ever looked at really closely. Right. But,
Well, and most people don't look at things like that closely. So people hear things like that on the news, they're like, oh, he's guilty.
Yeah.
So guilty.
Because, you know, the media is going to portray it that way.
Yeah.
And then regardless of whether it's fact or not.
And the courts don't allow the truth to be known, you know, and then you get convicted and then overturned and then supposedly get a new fair trial. People are
and somehow
already,
you still get convicted. Yeah. It blows my mind. I don't know what they convicted him on. There was nothing.
Nothing.
What the fuck did they convict him
right?
on? I want to know.
Roger fucking Pursley, piece of shit.
There was no physical evidence tying this man to this crime in any way, shape, or form. The gun was never
it's
found.
It's scary to think that things like that can happen.
That's why I say you lawyer up immediately. Yeah. By
fuck
God.
Yeah. I'm calling Morgan.
I'd be like, you know.
As soon as something happens.
Fucking prove it. Mm-hmm. That's what I got to say to you. Prove it. Because you got nothing.
I'd be one of those, I guess. I just have to stonewall and just sit there and not say anything and just be like, get my lawyer.
You're going to fucking,
it. You know?
Give me my lawyer.
Yep. Don't say nothing.
Not a word. However, some justice was served in another case.
Yes.
Mr. Robert Durst was found guilty of murdering his best friend, Susan Berman.
Even though he tried to act like he was so sick and couldn't
stand
trial. I mean,
he still is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 78. He does have, like, one foot in the grave already. So, I mean, I don't think they've actually sentenced him yet. But, you know, he's going to spend the rest of his days in jail.
Yeah. However short or long that is.
I mean, the man, he had a good run. He was a free man for a very long time. So.
Yeah.
I mean.
He should consider himself lucky.
Very
that
lucky.
That.
You know, that it took him this long to get caught. And convicted of any of the three murders he most likely committed. So, yeah. But, yeah.
So that's the story of Anthony. If that doesn't piss you off, get your fucking adrenaline pumping. I don't know what will.
You know, I was typing up these notes and I was like, I'm just going to tell every one of y'all out here. Oh, my God. Make this story blow up. Just share it with everybody you know.
Get it on. We need it on like Dateline or like something like that. Another big one.
I mean, shit like this happens probably way more often than we even know.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And you know it does. This is just one of the cases that we got to find out about it happening on. You know?
I'm just.
How many people
like,
are behind
you know,
bars on
make,
shit like this?
Make people see. Just share it with everybody you know. If you don't know the story, you know, look into it. Read. Or watch that documentary.
Yes, watch
just,
the documentary.
I need to find the name of that one on Netflix.
Oh, the series.
Yes. The Confession Tapes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is what
that's
it's called.
That's what it's called. Watch the Confession Tapes. I mean, there are some. I mean, now, a couple of those were a little iffy, like, maybe they did actually do it. But the majority of them are like, oh, no.
Yeah, definitely not.
Not even. I remember being infuriated watching that and was like, well, that tells me right there. As soon as, you know, if anything was to ever happen and a cop wanted to talk to me, lawyer.
Yep.
Lawyer.
100%.
I don't give a fuck if it makes me look guilty or not. Lawyer.
I don't care.
So, yeah, that's the story of Anthony Gray. And like Lena said, I hope it pisses you off as much as it pisses us off. And, yeah.
Hope you enjoyed it. I don't know who I'm going to do yet next. I started one, and then I didn't like it, and I scratched it. So, when I come over on Sunday, I guess we'll know. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
And I don't know who I'm going to do after this. I don't know. I haven't actually even thought about it. I've been so engrossed with this one and angry about it. And just
it gets hard to move on sometimes.
I know.
To find
especially given that, you know, his trial just happened.
Right,
I think it was going on, like, what, Well, I guess it started before we went to Vegas and ended sometime when we were out there. So.
Yep.
But yeah. All right. Well, until next week.
See you all next week.
Yeah. You guys have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.